Well, hello and welcome back to Archaeology News Weekly. I am, as ever, your seasonal and jovial host, David Connolly. I assure you, I am not wearing a Santa Claus outfit, as we are still 2 weeks away from Christmas. So, opening some presents early, let's get on with the news. This news, of course, is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view the details of each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now the main headlines from around the world are as follows. Ancient Pacific Islanders are brought to light, if not to life, and we report on a new method for absolute dating of rock art. There's worrying news of an Iron Age midden and site on Skye being threatened by erosion, and more evidence of Australia's first human occupation is found. Then we move to Laos and the mysterious Plain of Jars, and there's news on the winter solstice events at Newgrange, and the sad loss, unfortunately, of the webcast. While in the USA, a new study examines a diffusion of maze theory in the southwest of the country. Ancient artifacts are found in the University of Washington's greenhouse, and our first disaster story, there seems to be no evidence for a meteorite impact 13,000 years ago. Early Ohioans track the solstice, and you'll be able to do the same at an amazing event at the Serpent Stones. And finally, back to disaster, an ancient volcano's devastating effects 70,000 years ago have now finally been confirmed. When a team of archaeologists began excavating an old coral reef in Vanuatu in 2008 and 2009, they soon discovered it had served as a cemetery in ancient times. So far, 71 buried individuals have been recorded, giving new information on the island's inhabitants and their funeral rites. Mads Raden, head of research at the University of Stavanger Museum of Archaeology in Norway, commented that this is a groundbreaking discovery, as it's the oldest and largest skeleton find ever in the Pacific Ocean. Bigger cemeteries have been found further east, but they are all much younger. Relatives did not treat their dead so gently as well. Besides being headless, some of them had to have their arms and legs broken in order to fit into the coral reef cavities. Raven even suggested that this may have been left to rot first and later buried as partial skeletons. Vanuatu is a nation of 83 islands located 1,750 kilometres east of Australia. The soil contains traces of a violent volcanic eruption, believed to have taken place exactly 3,000 years ago. Scientists have found no sign of human activity predating this event. A few decades ago in Bali and other Pacific islands, people were putting their ancestors' skull on display in their homes, which may explain why the Vanuatu skeletons are headless. One skeleton, in fact, was found with five skulls on its chest. Raven believes that the heads may have been used in ancestral rituals. Each grave, is marked with a pottery jar decorated with intricate patterns, possibly stamped by small pieces of worked bone. The ceramic also depicts faces and eyes, perhaps images of the ancestors. Vanuatu's first inhabitants probably came from Taiwan and the Philippines, having travelled thousands of miles by outrigger canoes equipped with sails and big enough to contain whole families. They settled on the uninhabited islands and supported themselves by fishing and cultivating the land. Giant tortoises were abundant and easy to catch. Volcanic ash deposits from 3,000 years ago contain many tracks of tortoises, which are entirely non-existent 100 years later. It's interesting to observe the consequences of human beings taking possession of virgin land. Traces of mussel shells also bear witness to excessive consumption. The shells diminish in size as sediments get younger as the inhabitants overextended their resources. Tooth analysis also revealed what the first islanders may have looked like. They were more probably fair-skinned of Asian origin, unlike the present-day Melanesians whose skin is darker. The original settlers probably travelled on or mixed with the Melanesians who arrived later. But future DNA studies and isotopic analysis may later confirm these theories. An Italian scientist has developed a method for absolute dating of rock art applied to the sites of marble outcrop surfaces on the Apuan mountain chains in northwest Tuscany. In all likelihood, these carvings are not of prehistoric origin, but date from the historic times instead, and the new method seems to confirm this. Now, bear with me on this. The mathematical technique used by Paolo Bagnoli is the so-called Monte Carlo method, which consists of the study of macroscopic properties of a granular system, starting from the continuous repetition of microscopic stochastic events whose probability laws is supposed to be known. Are you still with me? Well, these laws were related to the speed of various erosion mechanisms for limestone. By using the above prescribed procedures, it was possible to observe the time evolution of the cross-section of the engravings subjected to natural erosion processes, such as freeze-thaw and chemical dissolution, in a time range spanning about 2,000 years, and then to evaluate the trend behaviours of both depth and width of the erosion. This is only the beginning phase of the research, but the first experimental data gathered from the so-called Billhook Step on Mount Gaberi seems to be encouraging. Besides the uncertainty of the input data required by the mathematical analysis, Paolo Bagnoli believes that the new method is very promising for obtaining reliable absolute dates for rock art, at least on limestone rocks anyway, horizontal flat surfaces and open air exposure and figures traced in contour. An ancient rubbish tip used nearly 2,000 years ago is disappearing into the Scottish Sea, archaeologists have warned. The Iron Age Midden on Skye's west coast has so far yielded bone fragments, stone tools and a button manufactured from horn, as well as the top of a human skull. But experts are battling the elements in a race to save the 2,000-year-old treasure trove from the elements. The man-made tools and fragments are already under attack from lashing waves and strong winds, with significant amounts of material already lost to the sea. A report published by Highland Council's Historic Environment Record said that at the current rate of erosion, the site will not last beyond 2010. The settlement is thought to have been inhabited from 80 CE. It was discovered by local archaeologists Martin Wildgoose and Stephen Birch in 2005. Excavations last year and this year have uncovered a number of fascinating objects. Among the tools and animal bones, archaeologists found the remains of a human skull with a small hole drilled in the top. Experts have speculated that the hole could have been made while the victim was still alive as a primitive form of surgery. The rock shelter in Midden, known as Cave of the Speckled Horse, is 3 kilometres southwest of the village of Fiskavig. It's extremely difficult to get to the site by land, with excavators having to negotiate a steep 100-metre descent of high grass and heather before arriving at the shore below. Access by sea is only possible in calm conditions due to the hazardous landing on a boulder and pebble beach. When it became clear that time was against the archaeologists, Historic Scotland sponsored the excavations to recover as many artefacts as possible before the site was destroyed. A spokesman for Historic Scotland said that from the evidence gathered, it was clear that an important and unusual site was at severe risk from continuing erosion. A campaign of excavation was quickly organised with funding from Historic Scotland and other sources. The excavations have revealed that during the Iron Age, people used this location as a temporary home. Details of those who lived in the cave were yet to emerge, but ongoing analysis suggests there was strong evidence for metalworking. Well, I hope to report more on that in 2010 itself. Evidence of what could be Australia's earliest human occupation has been found on the fringe of a desert in the country's remote northwest, according to archaeologists. Peter Veth of the Australian National University said an artefact dated at between 45 and 50,000 years old, found near the shores of Lake Gregory, could be the start of a new 25-year study into Australia's first humans. This is the first evidence of human activity in the arid northwest of the continent, which can be dated to a time before the last Great Ice Age. It was likely to be of the same order of antiquity as the oldest human remains found in the country, discovered in the country's eastern state of New South Wales in 1969 and now dated to around 40,000 years ago. Dr. Veth said that archaeologists have been extremely conservative in their dating of the artefact, which was found in 2008, adding that the site was likely to be a rich source of data in the years to come. In the northeastern province of the Lao People's Democratic Republic, there's a plateau scattered with ancient stone jars. Known as, unsurprisingly, the Plain of Jars, this site is famous for huge stone vessels ranging in height from 1.5 to 3 metres, whose original purpose remains a mystery to this day. According to one local legend, these enormous receptacles were hollowed from blocks of stone in order to ferment an alcoholic concoction for the consumption at a mass celebration of a great military victory thousands of years ago. Archaeologists, however, have come up with a more sobering theory, but with no supporting evidence, alas, that the jars are actually coffins, perhaps as much as 2,000 years old. Some 7 kilometres from Phnom Svan, the provincial capital, lies the principal jar site, known as Ban Ang, or, more simply, Site Number 1. It contains more than 300 of these gargantuan vessels. The other two main sites, and yes, you guessed it, called Site Number 2 and Site Number 3, are only a few kilometres away. Unfortunately, roaming at will around the plain of jars is not to be recommended due to the high number of bombs from the Vietnam War that failed to detonate and are still highly dangerous. Due to budget cuts by the Irish government, I'm afraid the winter solstice illumination at Newgrange will no longer be streamed live on the internet this year. Access to the chamber at Newgrange for the solstice illumination has been decided by lottery. However, all are welcome to gather outside the entrance to the mound on each of the mornings from December the 18th to December the 23rd, with sunrise at 8:58 a.m. On Sunday the 20th of December, there will be a free concert at 3 p.m. in the Bruna Boyne Visitor Centre featuring the Tredach Singers. The same day, a winter solstice conference will be taking place at the Newgrange Lodge, and Martin Brennan returns to Ireland after 25 years to headline the conference. Martin Brennan wrote The Boyne Valley Vision and The Stones of Time, two books which radically altered thinking about Stone Age monuments and which challenged the widely held academic views that Newgrange, Nowth and Douth were just tombs. The author, who now lives in Mexico where he is currently working on concluding his next book, will reveal the resonance and the synchronicity between his discoveries in Mexico and those he made in Ireland in the 1980s. The Boyne Valley Revision will take place on Sunday, December the 20th at the Newgrange Lodge. Tickets are on sale now at €65 for the day and can be booked by emailing Sarah, S-A-R-A, at ebc.ie or by phoning the Newgrange Lodge on, that's 00353-41988-2478. I'll give you that number again. It was 00353-41988-2478. And 20th of December is actually a very important day in the calendar, as that's my birthday as well. An international group of anthropologists offers a new theory about the diffusion of maize to the southwestern United States and the impact it had. The study, co-authored by Gail Fritz, Professor of Anthropology in Arts and Sciences at Washington University, along with her colleagues, suggests that maize was passed from group to group of southwestern hunter-gatherers. These people took advantage of improved moisture conditions by integrating a storable and potentially high-yielding crop into their broad-spectrum subsistence strategy. For decades, there have been two competing scenarios for the spread of maize and other crops into what is now the US Southwest. According to the first, groups of farmers migrated northward from central Mexico into northwest Mexico and from there into the southwest, bringing their crops and associated lifestyles with them. In the second scenario, though, maize moved northward from central Mexico to the southwest by being passed from one hunter-gatherer band to the next, who incorporated the crop into their subsistence economies and eventually became farmers themselves. On the new study, the researchers integrate what is currently known about early maize in the southwest with genetic, paleoecological, and historical linguistic studies. Corn from 5 sites in Arizona and New Mexico now predates 2000 BCE, which makes it too early to be explained by diffusion of settled Mexican villagers. No artifacts or features of any type point to incoming Mesoamerican farmers. In fact, continuity of local traditions is manifested with independent invention of low-fired ceramics and with the construction of irrigation features in the Tucson Basin dating earlier than any known south of the border. 3 ancient artifacts, 4,000 to 7,000 years old, have been found by the University of Washington's Botany Greenhouse, the university announced. One piece is a stone projectile point, and the other two are fragments of stone tools. Ellen Van Wyk, who is Botany Greenhouse volunteer, found the projectile point buried by the greenhouse on October the 22nd. The greenhouse staff told the Burke Museum about the discovery, who then dug three test pits in the area and found the two tool fragments. The discovery site is near a documented Native American trail. The museum has contacted the area's tribes about the discovery, and the university plans to check out the discovery area more and to survey other parts of the campus with pending construction projects for potential artifact sites. People stumbling across a potential artifact site are encouraged to call the museum's archaeology department. One also should add that before doing any building and construction work, perhaps it's better to have a bit of archaeology there beforehand. An international team of scientists led by researchers at the University of Hawaii at Manoa have found no evidence supporting an extraterrestrial impact event at the onset of the Younger Dryas about 13,000 years ago. The Younger Dryas is an abrupt cooling event in the Earth's history, coincided with the extinction of many large mammals. This cooling period is generally considered to be the result of the complex global climate system, possibly spurred on by a reduction or slowdown of the thermohaline circulation in North America. The paradigm was challenged 2 years ago by a group of researchers that report finding high levels of iridium in terrestrial sediments dated during this time period, which led them to theorize that an impact event was instead the instigator of this climate shift. A team led by François Paguet, a doctoral graduate student in the Department of Geology and Geophysics at the University of Hawaii, decided to also investigate this theory to add more evidence to what they considered to be a conceptually appealing theory. However, not only were they unable to replicate the results found by the other researchers, but additional lines of evidence failed to support an impact theory for the onset of the Younger Dryas. There is a black mat layer across North America which is correlated to the Younger Dryas climatic shift, seen in Greenland ice cores dated at 13,000 years ago by radiocarbon. Initially, he thought this type of layer could be associated with an impact event because concentration in the proxies of widespread wildfires are sky high. That, plus very high levels of iridium, which is one indicator used to indicate extraterrestrial impact events. So the theory was conceptually appealing, but because of the missing impact site, the idea was one of multiple airbursts. Because there are so many aspects to the impact theory, they decided to just focus on geochemical evidence that was associated with it, like the concentration of iridium and other platinum group elements, and the osmium isotopes. They also decided to look in very high-resolution sediment cores across North America, and yet could find nothing in the data to support the theory. Analysis for the sediments was done both at UHM and in Belgium, using the same sediments from the same interval and independently. They did their analysis work and both achieved the similar result. Both the marine and terrestrial sediment records do not indicate that an impact event was the trigger for the transition into the Younger Dryas cold period. The marine and terrestrial records both complement each other and support the finding. So, can I ask a question now? What was it then? On the winter solstice, the sun seems to pause momentarily and then start to come back to those people living in the northern hemisphere. The winter solstice was an important event in the lives of ancient Americans, and they knew exactly when it happened. Probably they felt comforted that they knew that spring was on its way back again. In Ohio, we know that the Hopewell and Fort Ancient cultures knew when the solstice happened because they left behind earthworks and other features that point to the sunrise or sunset on the solstices. Bradley Lepper, curator of archaeology at the Ohio Historical Society, said two of these features are at the Fort Ancient earthworks in Warren County. There are two so-called stone serpent effigies in the field below the earthworks. One of the stone effigies is lined up to the summer solstice. The other lines up to the winter solstice. The Historical Society is going to have an event called the Light Up the Serpent at the Serpent Mounds. And people will light up a giant snake effigy in Adams County with little candle lanterns and surround the serpent effigy between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. on December the 20th. It should be magical. And there it is again, December the 20th, very important date around the world. Yes, my birthday. I'm not making any hints here. A massive volcanic eruption that occurred in the distant past killed off much of central India's forests and may have pushed humans to the brink of extinction, according to a new study that adds evidence to a controversial topic. The Toba eruption, which took place on the island of Sumatra in Indonesia about 73,000 years ago, released an estimated 800 cubic kilometres of ash into the atmosphere that blanketed the skies and blocked out sunlight for 6 years. In the aftermath, global temperatures dropped by as much as 16 degrees centigrade, and life on Earth plunged deep into an ice age that lasted around 1,800 years. In 1998, Stanley Amrose, an anthropology professor at the University of Illinois, proposed that the effects of the Toba eruption and the ice age that followed could explain the apparent bottleneck in human populations that geneticists believe occurred between 50 to 100,000 years ago. The lack of genetic diversity among humans alive today suggests that during this time period, humans came very close to becoming extinct. To test his theory, Ambrose and his research team analysed pollen from a marine core in the Bay of Bengal that had a layer of ash from the Toba eruption. The researchers also compared carbon isotope ratios in fossil soil taken from directly above and below the Toba ash in three different locations in central India, some 3,000 miles from the volcano itself, to try and pinpoint the type of vegetation that existed at various locations and time periods both before and after the eruption. The tests revealed a distinct change in the type of vegetation in India. This analysis indicates a shift to a more open vegetation cover and reduced representation of ferns, which grow in humid conditions, all of which would suggest significantly drier conditions in this area for at least 1,000 years after the Toba eruption. This is unambiguous evidence that Toba caused deforestation in the tropics for a very long time, and Ambrose concluded that the disaster may have forced the ancestors of modern humans to adopt a new cooperative strategy to survive. Well, the way things are going with the world today, it won't be long before this is happening again. Anyway, on that cheery and festive note, can I remind you that you better get along to pasthorizons.com and have a look perhaps at their magazine and also at the new opportunities for 2010 in getting involved in archaeology. There's also, of course, the tool store and a fabulous video site as well to go with it. Can I also remind people that there is Badger out there? Yes, it's www.bajr.org, the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. Always worth a look. And more can always be found as well at stonepagesnews.stonepages.com. So thank you for listening to the Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you return again to us next week.